You're listening to the Sisters in Lost podcast, a faith-based podcast that spotlights Black women who replace silence with storytelling around pregnancy and infant loss and infertility. Black women experience miscarriage and stillbirth 4 to 5 times more likely than white women, according to the NIH and CDC. Whether you've experienced a miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, are trying to conceive, or have an infertility diagnosis, you will learn about resources and strategies to heal, gain clarity, peace, hope, and find an empowering path forward after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee, and you will hear me interview sisters in loss who have healed from such a painful and traumatic experience by sharing their testimonies and stories to inspire and help others turn their pain into their purpose. Now let's get started. Welcome to episode 211 of the Sisters in Loss podcast. After battling infertility for 10 years with polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS, today's guest delivered her baby at 27 weeks, spent 6 months in the neonatal intensive care unit, or NICU, and then lost her baby. Leanne Toddy went on to have another baby at 25 weeks, who also spent time in the NICU and is now thriving. Her experience led her to writing her children's book, Baby Went to Heaven, to help explain infant loss to children when her goddaughter asked her where the baby was and she didn't know what to tell her. In this episode, Leanne takes us back to being diagnosed with PCOS, getting weight loss surgery, her NICU experience, and PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, from her birth experiences. We discussed the feeling like your body has failed you and that you're being punished by not being able to bring a baby home. This episode is for you to listen to if you've experienced a long road to parenthood and want to hear hope and resilience on this journey. Here is Leanne Toddy. Well, welcome, Leanne, to the podcast.
Hi, good to be here.
I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. I am Leanne Toddy, and I am an administrator at a teaching hospital in D.C. I've been there for about 15 years. Can't believe it's been that long. That same hospital is where I had all of my experiences. So that in itself is interesting.
Yes. So take us back on your journey to motherhood. Share with us your love story.
Yes. So I got married back in 2006. I'd known my husband for several years before that. We met while we were in college. At that time, I knew I had PCOS because my cycles were irregular. So I knew that getting pregnant would be, a little bit challenging, but because I worked in OBGYN, we had fertility specialists that were on staff. So I felt, confident that if I didn't get pregnant right away, I can go to one of them and they would help me out. So as soon as we got married, we started trying to have children. It wasn't working out. I wasn't getting pregnant. So at that time, the fertility specialists had branched off and formed their own group with Shady Grove. I don't know if you've heard of, well, you probably have if you're in the DMV. But yeah, so they branched off and I went to go see, I think it was Dr. Woodruff first. And, he's like, you're young, you're healthy otherwise, you'll be having a kid in no time. And I was like, yes, this is what I want to hear, So of course, he started trying me on Clomid. That was the first step that we took, and several tries of Clomid, nothing happened. I didn't get pregnant. So now he's like, you want to do IUI? So I was like, okay, nothing happened then. And at that point, I was like, let me just leave this up to God. We've been trying for a while, and if it's meant to be, it'll be. So several more years went by, and then I, out of the blue, naturally just got pregnant. And I was like, oh, thank you, God. Yes, this is what I've been praying for. This is what I was hoping for. This is it. Thank you. And so it was, after, if you've been waiting to get pregnant and then when you finally do, it's like all of that joy, the release and all of that. We had all of that. We were so happy. And working in OBGYN, all of my doctors were there, so I was getting good care. It wasn't like, a case where I was neglected or anything like that. I was getting very good care. But one day, like at my, like shortly after my 18 week point, I had another appointment at home. So I didn't go to work that day. And I was, after I came back, I was like on the bed watching TV or something. And I'm on the bed and I just felt like a pop. And even then, it didn't register in my mind that, you know, my water had broke. But then I had to go to the bathroom. When I got up to go to the bathroom, it was like, you know, all of the water and blood or whatever. And I panicked. My husband wasn't home, but I called him instead of calling 911. I called my husband and he rushed home and he took me to the hospital. And, you know, they took a look there. It was a Catholic hospital in Baltimore, St. Agnes Hospital. He took us there and, you know, they took good care of me, but I lost that baby. It's really, that experience is so eye-opening because, you know, they take you upstairs to labor and delivery where people normally have their babies. So you're in like a maternity room or whatever because, you know, there's the birthing tub there. All of the accoutrements, like if you're going to have a baby, but and because it was a Catholic hospital, my water had broke, but the baby still had a heartbeat, you know, but in 18 weeks, it wasn't sustaining, like life-sustaining. So we knew that I would lose the baby, but because the heart was still beating, they didn't do anything to stop that. So I had to be basically in that room, the birthing room, and they were checking me periodically to make sure that the heart stopped. And when it stopped, I delivered my son. I mean, he was perfect. Like, I didn't realize that at that age, like 18 weeks, that he would have everything a normal baby would. I mean, of course, he didn't look exactly like a normal baby, but, you know, he had all of his fingers, all of his toes, his eyes, ears, everything. And it was just so, so, so traumatic. And that was my first experience with loss. And I will tell you, it's like the blinders came off because I still didn't want to do IVF. I didn't want to go through all of that. But it seems like every time I let myself rest or stop worrying about it, that's when I would wind up pregnant. So shortly after, and not shortly, well, in 2000, I can't remember the dates, but I think it's 2015, I got pregnant again with my son. No, I'm all mixing it up. I'm sorry. Before that, I was pregnant again, but this one was only for a short little while. I had my checkup, like my normal, you know, the first pregnancy checkup. Baby was fine. Heartbeat was there. And then it was time for my nuchal translucency. And I came in. And again, you know, these doctors are my friends, my colleagues. So I was in the room and she took the, you know, the little bedside ultrasound, because first I had a regular checkup and then I was going to get the nuchal translucency. And she put the ultrasound thing on my belly and there was no heartbeat. And I can tell something was wrong because her face just dropped. I was like, it's okay, Dr. Wallen. It's okay. I know that it's, you know, I know something. I didn't know something wasn't right before, but at that point when I saw her face, like I just knew that something wasn't right. So it turned out that my baby had stopped growing. The heart had stopped beating and there wasn't a baby anymore. And I think I was just completely jaded at this point. I am a Christian, so I have faith. I read the Bible. I go to church. I do all of that. But my faith was so tested. I'm like, God, why are you doing this to me? Why are you giving me these promises and then just taking them away? It's like, you know, like a beaten switch. Like, I get so happy and then it's gone like that in a flash. But, you know, you just... My philosophy has always been to live one day at a time. I continue to pray, even though I was questioning, you know, I continue to pray and just trust him. That's what I did. So after that baby, I got pregnant again. And this time it was with my son, Lionel. Because of my previous losses, you know, they thought it was incompetent cervix because that was the only thing that they can really attribute it to, my 18-week loss. And then this one. So for him, I got a cerclage. And I thought things were going pretty well. You know, every single appointment. You know, when you're pregnant after a loss, like it's, you get this apprehensive feeling, you know, like you can't enjoy little milestones, but you're still looking forward to each one that you've passed before. Like, you know, that 18-week mark, I was like, oh God, yes, thank you, Jesus. You know, everything is okay. And you just, after each day, you're praying and hoping that you make it to the next. So that was what it was like with Lionel. But when we went to one of his appointments, it was past the anatomy scan. But when we went to one of them, they're like, you know, he's a little bit smaller than we'd like to see. He's, you know, IUGR at that point. So I had to have more close monitoring or whatever. And they were saying that there was something wrong with his brain or whatever. But then I went and I got the fetal echo and everything was fine with that. So I was like, yes, God, you know, everything is going well. I ended up having him at 27 weeks because of like reverse flow or something like that with the ultrasound. I'm not, even though I work in OBGYN, I'm not a medical professional. I'm in administration. So I'm not quite up to date with what the correct wording is. But it was like reverse flow from of the blood to the placenta, something like that. I'm not exactly sure. So I had they had to take him. He was already small. When he came out, you know, he had to be resuscitated, but I think that was kind of what they had expected. But he was there, you know, he was there, he was thriving. He had bad lungs. That was his major issue. He had bad lungs and he had to go to the NICU. He lived in there for about 5 months and 25 days, exactly 5 months and 25 days. Every day, you know, I would go to the NICU every single day. And I live actually 2 hours from where the NICU is. So every day, my husband and I would drive down there and I would just spend hours and hours with my baby. I couldn't touch him for like, I don't know, about 3 months or something like that. They wouldn't let me like hold him or anything like that. So I would just be sitting at the isolate watching him all day long. I'm not even kidding, like all day long. Just sit there watching him and praying for him, reading to him, having him hear my voice, you know, hoping, no, for the day that he would come home, because I believe that he would come home. I strongly believe that he would. Every single setback that Lionel had, like he overcame it. Like he was so strong, such a fighter. And he taught me so much. So all of this, you know, that I've experienced, the loss that I've had, I feel like it was a teaching journey for me. Like God was helping me to come into my own, you know, to just learn how to be a better advocate for myself and for someone else. That was the biggest thing, because, you know, I had to go back and forth with his doctors, ask a bunch of questions, you know, research things that they were telling me so that I could make sure that he was getting the best treatment, all of that. His lungs were bad. And I remember reading that one of the best hospitals for BPD, which is what he had, was at Children's Nationwide. And I kept asking them for a consult, you know, to consult with them, because I just wanted the best care for him. And they're like, no, we don't need to do that. But I kept pushing and pushing and pushing for it. And towards the end, they actually did agree to doing that. And when they did, like, he did improve. He ended up getting a trach, but and this is somewhere along the journey of those 5 months and 25 days. You know, whatever strategies Nationwide gave them, they employed and it helped. What actually killed Lionel was pneumonia. Could you believe that? Like after everything that he went through, it was pneumonia. That was the final thing. But again, like Lionel, he was the catalyst for me writing that book, Baby Went to Heaven. Because when he came home, when we came home, my goddaughter was like, where's the baby? And our parents were so mortified. You can just see the look on her face, like on her mom's face. She was just so like mortified. And, you know, they told her, you know, be quiet now, the baby's not here. But that was the catalyst for me writing that book. I always wrote down my feelings. Like I was blogging while Lionel was in the hospital. So I wrote my feelings down. And then when she asked that question, I said, oh, you know, this would be, you know, if you, because we didn't know what to say to her in that moment or at that time. So I just wrote a little poem that I had in my head, like it just came to me. And I wrote it, Baby Went to Heaven, to explain that the baby isn't here and it's not coming home because there were some problems in the hospital. That was that. So yeah, after Lionel, and me writing that book, of course, I got to meet people like you, Erica. Like, for some reason, like, when I had my first loss, there weren't any support groups out there. But after Lionel, I found you somehow. I think it was through Instagram. And just listening to, you know, the podcast of all the other women who've been going through similar experiences, you know, it helped me. It helped me to understand that I'm not in this alone. You know, I'm not going through this by myself. other women are going through this, and it's not something to be ashamed of, because I was ashamed. You know, I felt like a failure, like as a woman, you know, that's one of the things you're supposed to be able to do. You're supposed to have children, have a family. And I just couldn't do it. You know, my husband definitely wanted children, and I just couldn't give it to him. So just hearing other women go through that was so helpful and so cathartic, or I don't know what that word is, but something like that. So that was that. After Leonel, I got pregnant again with my rainbow, Lucas. Lucas was born at 25 weeks. So that pregnancy too, it was just one day at a time. Like literally, I was living one day at a time. As I would pass one day, I would say, oh my God, thank you, Jesus. I've made it past one day. You know, each day was a different day. I say that Lucas is my light because at that time, you know, I was, before I found out I was pregnant, I was in a really, really dark place, like losing all of these babies, doubting myself, doubting my faith. And when I found out I was pregnant with him, it was like the sunshine broke through, you know, through all the clouds, here comes the sun. That's Lucas. That's why his name is Lucas. Lucas means light. I didn't name him until he was actually here. Like I didn't have a name for him until he was delivered. I didn't tell anybody about my pregnancy. Like my mom knew, but his parents, my husband's parents, didn't know. A lot of people didn't know because I just didn't want to go through that experience again of saying, hey, I'm pregnant, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, there's no baby. So I didn't tell many people at all. People at work knew because, of course, that's where I got my care. But nobody outside of that knew. So when he was born, again, it was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is happening to me again. I can't get attached because if I do, you know, 5 months down the road, who knows how many months down the road, I won't have a baby anymore. But Lucas, he was so strong. He is so strong. He defied all of the odds. Even though he was born at 25 weeks, and he was only 1 pound, 9 ounces when he was born, he just defied all of the odds. Like he had a normal NICU stay. I would say normal because, you know, I was able to hold him shortly after he was born. You know, I could do skin to skin contact with him. I held him on my chest every day in that NICU, and Lucas just thrived and thrived and thrived. When he came home, everything was great. He came home with a heart monitor because there was something, he had a PDA that hadn't closed all the way, but eventually it did close. So that's, you know, I'm grateful for that. So he had a heart monitor and something else to monitor his lungs. So he was attached to those two machines, but those were his only things. And he got over those pretty quickly, in my opinion. But yeah, so I don't even know where I was going. I'm all lost in thought. But he was perfect, and he still is perfect to me. He would go to all of his developmental appointments, his to check his milestones, to make sure he's growing appropriately or whatever. And earlier on, you know, he was delayed, and we all attributed to his prematurity. You know, he was, you know how they do the adjusted and the corrected age. So all of his delays, I thought, was, you know, was due to his prematurity. And honestly, I didn't care then, and I don't care now about those delays, because I just know that Lucas will grow into the man that he's meant to be or supposed to be. And I'll just help him every single step of the way that I have to. Later on, though, like at 2, Lucas wasn't talking. And he's still nonverbal. And I took him to his appointments, and of course, by then, he was already in early intervention. He'd been in that since he'd come home, but even his early intervention instructors, like, they hadn't mentioned anything about autism to me, and it wasn't even on my radar. I just thought that, you know, he was delayed, but again, Lucas is my perfect baby. I don't care about that. I'll do all I have to do to help him, but autism wasn't even on my mind. But at 2, after he wasn't talking, I took him to a speech therapist, and she's like, has anyone ever told you that he may have autism? I'm like, no. Why do you think he has autism? She's like, well, for one, he isn't speaking, and then, you know, I'm observing him, and he's like spinning all these wheels, he's spinning around. Like all of these things, I had just thought they were natural parts to Lucas. I thought he was inquisitive. He wanted to see how things work. So that's why he's turning the cars over and spinning the wheels. I had like an explanation for everything, but apparently those are traits of autism. So we had him tested, you know, all of these specialists, a psychologist, all of that, they observed him, and they say that he is on the spectrum. And, you know, it'd be irresponsible of me not to see that and agree with it, because as he's gotten older, you know, I did notice that he's has some sensory issues. He doesn't like loud noises or anything like that. He still, you know, he has some flapping that he does and some things that are just not like normal, but it's normal for him. And that's the way I see it. You know, this is Lucas. He knows how to communicate. He just doesn't speak. When he wants something to eat, he'll come take me to where he wants to go to get the food to eat. So he knows how to communicate. But he's just on the spectrum. But if I were to put him in a room with another 3-year-old, you know, it's not the same. I see that because my cousin has a 3-year-old, and it's hard not to compare. Like, when kids are side by side. But again, I just know that Lucas, that's his normal. And he's gonna, when he's ready to talk, I feel like he will talk. But that doesn't mean I don't get him all the help. He goes to speech, he goes to OT, he goes to PT, and he also has like early intervention still and ABA, which is controversial and more learning. But he does go to his ABA therapy, and I honestly feel like it is helping him. But that's Lucas. So Lucas is 3. I thought Lucas would be my only child. I was set. I was believing that Lucas would be my baby, and that's it. He's my world, and he still is. I had gotten an IUD after Lucas because they told me it's not safe for me to get pregnant again. Like, all of those early deliveries was due to preeclampsia as well and HELLP syndrome. So they told me that it wouldn't be safe for me to get pregnant again. So that's why I got an IUD. And lo and behold, in 2020, I wasn't feeling very well. And I told my mom, you know, we were going to Costco or something like that. I was like, Mom, you go ahead in this car. I got to sit in this car because I'm just not feeling good. And she's like, are you pregnant? I'm like, no, I'm not pregnant. You know how hard it is for me to get pregnant. I am not pregnant. And I was a bit upset with her, but she was right. I guess my mom knows her baby. I was pregnant. I was already 3.5 months or something like that when I found out. I would say that I'm grateful for it because it took away a lot of that anxiety that I normally have when I'm pregnant. Like, I didn't think, you know, I have to think about it every day. Am I going to make it to the next day? Am I going to hear the heartbeat at the appointment? I had no prenatal care up until that point. I told my doctor, and she was like, what? She could not believe it. But they couldn't find that IUD anywhere, so who knows where it is. I had Layton, which is my last baby. I had him at 34 weeks, and right now he is 7 months old. So Layton is just fine. He is just fine. And he's a different baby than Lucas ever was. I feel like if I had had Layton first, I might have realized that something was different about Lucas, because he is just different. Like, at this age, he's babbling and talking more. A lot of things that Lucas hadn't done at that point. But as a first-time mom, I didn't know that any of that was abnormal. And again, all of the delays that he had, I had been attributing it to his prematurity. But I see now, looking at Layton, that, you know, something was off. But all of that, you know, my journey is one of hurt at first, you know, all of that disappointment, not being able to get pregnant, and then finally getting pregnant, and then losing the baby. And then here come Lucas, and then Layton, unexpected blessings, right? I say all of that to say that you never know what God has in store for you. You don't know. And how he plans things out might not be how you want it to be, but it will happen. Because through all of this, we were also looking at adoption too. We had actually met with a law group. We went to adoption fairs, but we just never did it. Like, I was thinking about going into my 401k to being able to afford the adoption, because it's not cheap at all. It's not cheap. But I was, you know, that would have been our next step if I hadn't gotten unexpectedly pregnant with either of my babies. But God works in such mysterious ways, or, you know, in his own timing. I come to believe that now I had to go through all of that to be able to see the good or the light. And he had to put me through that for one, to be able to advocate for Lucas. If I didn't have to advocate for Leonel, I wouldn't be able to advocate properly for Lucas. you know, with Leighton. I had to see what abnormal looks like to know what normal does look like. So I feel like he put me through all of these tests to prepare me for what's to come. I wrote Baby Went to Heaven to help moms explain that horrible loss to a child. And then I also wrote Baby Goes Home, a journey through the NICU home for moms who still have babies in the NICU. And, you know, just give them a little bit of hope that, you know, this thing, it will end. You will come home and you can have your baby even after the loss. I'm trying to write a few more books that deal with loss for kids, like Grandma Went to Heaven and Grandpa Went to Heaven. And I also have one that's coming out called Happily Me, and another one that I'm writing. This is about Lucas and overcoming his adversities. That is my story in a nutshell.
Yes, I love your story and how you shared the ebbs and flows. Obviously, you know, in between your losses, in between all the pregnancy after losses, the NICU stays, I'm sure there was just a lot of anxiety and worry and nervousness as you navigated that journey. And then to have a successful pregnancy, you know, in the midst of COVID, you know.
Oh my God, yes.
You gotta left that one out, but that is probably, you know, even more anxiety and worry that you have. Like, really, how can you really share with us how you navigated that journey? Because obviously, having a child on the spectrum, you know, being pregnant and then giving birth and during COVID, I'm sure that was a heightened awareness as well for you, because, you know, once you got past that 24, 25 week mark in your last pregnancy, I'm sure that was some relief for you as you move further into the third trimester.
Yes. So once I found out I was pregnant, of course, it was anxiety. Oh my God. Like, I was like, oh my God, I'm not supposed to be pregnant. You know, they told me not to get pregnant again. And here I am pregnant. Oh my gosh. So the first thing I did was reach out to my mental health counselor. I'm going to tell you that is clutch. Having someone that's outside it all to talk to really, really, really helped me. And I, to be honest, I still have weekly appointments with her. I was talking to her twice a week just to help me go through all of that anxiety and fear that I was having. Because one, I didn't have any, you know, prenatal care up until 3.5 months when I found out I was pregnant. It was too late for my NICU. It was too late for all of that. So I was like, oh my God, you know, what is going on? So I was very, 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 very afraid. With Lucas too, because at this point, this was like deep into his autism diagnosis. So we're still going to all of the specialist appointments, trying to figure out what was going on with him. What is the next step? So having someone to talk to was key for me. That was what I think has helped me get through this sane, because with COVID, working in a hospital, that just added a whole nother layer to it, because, you know, they didn't know and they still don't know how COVID affects, you know, pregnant women and pregnancy. So I was in my office, like basically like I would get to work, go into my office, close the door and just do my work until it's time for me to go home, open that door, put on my mask and run out of there. Because I just didn't want to have any added risk or exposure to myself. You know, I already go through these horrible pregnancies. I didn't want to add anything to it. But God has been looking out for me, because after every appointment, like, I'm expecting the other shoe to drop, but it just didn't. Late in this pregnancy was completely, completely normal, besides being during COVID. It was just amazing. Like, again, I think God put me through all of that to show me that, you know, after trials, you can find some joy.
Yes. So what other tools or resources that you've used to really help you navigate throughout, you know, all of the journeys that you've been on through loss, through the NICU stay, through, you know, navigating a pregnancy after loss, and now as a mother to, you know, a child on the spectrum, but also a new baby?
So this is where I feel, and it's okay to ask for help, but this is also where I feel like I need help with, because even though, like, you know, I know how to advocate for myself, I don't always know exactly where to go. Like, the hospital has a social worker, like, that they assigned to the NICU. I've become really good friends with her because what I do is, like, if I, you know, have a question or whatever, I'll reach out to her. And, of course, my therapist as well. From Lucas, I rely heavily on, like, his speech therapist and his developmental pediatrician. Like, whenever I have questions about how to navigate his care, like, I would go directly to them. I am an insular person, really, really, really an introvert. So it's hard for me to reach out and talk to people, which I feel is very, very important, though. Like, when you're going through this, like, you can't be alone. Like, you have to be able to speak to someone else to help you understand that your feelings are, one, valid. What you're going through, you're not the only one who goes through it. So I do a lot of online things. Like I said, that's how I found you, like, going online. Like, I'm more of, like, a background person. So I'll go online, I look it up, I'll read blogs, I listen to podcasts. I draw inspiration from those things. So even if you're not a people person, you can still, you know, find ways to get what you need from others. There's a, on my website, I have, like, a resources page. As I find, you know, websites and things that are good for me, I go ahead and I add them to that resources page. So that way, like, if someone else is going through what I've been through, or, you know, their own journey, they can go online and find resources like that to help them.
Definitely. We'll leave a link to her website below, because I think it's a great resource as well for those who have it. Because some people just need to know where to go for different ways to look for resources. Because a lot of folks may be very similar to you, and they just like to do, you know, want to make sure that they find a place where they feel comfortable and that they can share or be vulnerable. Or they see other stories where people are doing that, but they look like them and they can connect in that manner. So yeah, I'll definitely leave that as a resource list for everyone who's listening, who wants to learn about some of the other tools and things that you have gathered over the years. But obviously, we're all learning on this journey as well, as we navigate, you know, motherhood and parenthood after loss. I think we all are on this journey together. So I'm happy that you were transparent in that. I would love for you to share some encouraging words for our listeners as they are navigating. You know, we're still in this pandemic. You know, a lot of people are trying to conceive. They may be experiencing a pregnancy after loss. What encouraging words can you leave with our listeners?
I always say, do not give up. Don't give up. And the NICU, sometimes they call me to speak to parents who are experiencing, you know, when they think maybe the baby wouldn't make it. They want me to be like a guide for those parents, you know. I think sometimes they want me to tell them that, you know, their baby might not make it, and you have to prepare yourself for that. I do tell parents that, but I also tell them not to give up. Don't listen to what those people have to say, because remember, they don't have the final say. God does. Keep the faith. Listen and pray. Listen to what they're telling you, but also do your own research. Just like I was able to find Nationwide Children's, which I believe really, really helped my son towards the end of his life. Listen, research. And you also advocate for your child. Like, don't listen to what they say. God has the final say. So those of you who are trying to get pregnant, just know that it's possible. It is definitely possible. Me, I thought I couldn't. And here I am now with two healthy babies. Don't give up. Do not give up. Don't give up at all. He's listening to you. And he's listening to you. And it can happen. It can definitely happen. That's what I have.
Thank you so much, Leanne, for sharing your story. Where can our listeners connect with you after this episode?
I am on Instagram, Leanne.Toddy. You can look me up on Facebook, Leanne Toddy. Like, I don't change my name. Leanne.Toddy, that's where I am. My website is LeanneToddy.com. My email is Leanne.Toddy@gmail.com. You can reach out to me in any of those ways. I am an open book. Anything that you'd like to hear or ask me, please feel free. If you go to my website, you can read my blog, and that tells my story about Leonel and my other pregnancies in more detail. But please feel free to reach out to me in any way that you'd like.
Yes. And Also, we'll leave a link for where all of her books are as well, so that you all, if you are navigating the journey with other children, navigating through the NICU, you know, you definitely want to pick up her books to have for your home library, but also for your children's library as well. So thank you so much, Leanne. This has been amazing. I love your story, and I know that it will be a blessing to those who are on the other end and are listening.
Thank you so much, Erica. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For show notes, go to sistersinloss.com. To stay connected with us and join the Sisters in Loss community and receive my weekly newsletter, please go to sistersinloss.com/newsletter. That is sistersinloss.com/newsletter. Please rate and review this episode, and I will talk to you next week.